Welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. Dr. Kamai, the natural nurse, has the week off, and we're really excited to have our special guest on the radio program, a physician I've known for many years. We're actually schoolmates at Bastyr University, and we have on the illustrious Dr. Virinder Sodhi, and he is a fellow of integrative oncology, and he has his MD in Ayurveda from India and his naturopathic doctoral degree as a licensed naturopathic physician from Bastyr, where he practices out in Washington State. And we're going to talk about his new book, Ayurvedic Herbs, the Comprehensive Resource for Ayurvedic Healing Solutions, and talk a little bit about Ayurveda in general and why it's such a burgeoning field of medicine. Dr. Sodhi, are you there?
Yes, sir. Hi, Dr. Z. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm glad we were able to have you on. Really excited.
Yes, thank you.
Well, tell me a little bit about, you know, it says that, you know, Ayurvedic medicine and herbal medicine has been making a comeback, and it's the traditional medicine of India. The World Health Organization talks about that, and it is a good form, a primary form of care for hundreds of millions of Indians. But wasn't there a time that Ayurveda waned in the public's interest for more quote-unquote scientific medicine? Tell us a little bit about the ancient history and then also how it made a resurgence.
Yeah, it's a very good question. You know, a lot of times what I come across, and I think you come across too, that natural remedies are not scientifically proven or not been, you know, the rigorous double-blind control studies. Now, actually, there is a lot more data available as even we start practicing, I think me and you. And so the Ayurvedic medicine is very old, several thousand years old. A historian put it around 5,000 years old. I believe it's more than that because our planet is not 5,000 years old. So it was actually one of the leading medicine of the world. People will come from all over the world, from Europe, from China, from Arab countries, and they will learn in India. And there was universities, Takshila and Nalanda, they were that huge. There was around 14,000 professors in each university. So you can see the big volume of that university. And people learned surgeries. Sushruta is considered the father of the surgeries. And several thousand years ago, he did surgeries like appendectomies and hernia repairs, kidney stones and transplant and plastic surgery. Actually, he's considered the plastic surgeon of the world. He invented the concept of putting the nose back and putting the ears back, you know. Yeah, so, you know, if you Google it, it's amazing that you can find even the Brits and the Italian doctor learned it in the 17th, 18th century from Indians and actually from Ayurvedic doctors. And then they taught to the rest of the world. So, you know, if people say that Ayurvedic medicine was not very advanced, you know, we were very advanced. And what happened then, you know, we had invasions by the Mughals and then we had the Brits, you know. The Mughals actually kind of blended it. So, okay, you know, they used it as a mainstream medicine. But the Brits came in, and at the same time, the chemical medicine was taking off. And I think you know the rest of the story. A lot of the pharmaceutical or the corporate greed got into it, and people will start to going to the quick fix. You know, okay, you got a headache, you got a pill. You got a tummy ache, you got a pill. You got this pain, there's a pill. And people really did not focus on the real cause of the disease, and they were all fixing symptoms. And actually, if you look at it, still we're doing the same thing. We're finding a one, you know, shot molecule, and this, okay, that is the causing problem. Like there's a TNF-alpha for arthritis or psoriasis or this and that, and we're trying to blocking molecule for that. And do you think we gone anywhere? We're actually creating more problems. 60% of people who get into those kind of drugs will get lymphomas or Hodgkin's or cancers. So, you know, that is the sad part of the whole story. And the more I actually read about the science and the latest research on the genomics and everything, it makes sense the way we have practiced for thousands of years without disturbing the balance of the humans and the earth. We should do that way, which is Mother Nature knows how to do it. And that's about Ayurvedic medicine. It's about learning how the Mother Nature, you know, plays the role in our lives and in our environment, in our seasons, and how it actually tackles all those problems automatically. And we are blessed to have our body as a full pharmacy.
So how in India now is Ayurvedic medicine practiced?
Yes.
And are there centers of higher learning? You clearly went to Ayurvedic medical school before you came here to this country. Tell us a little bit about that and what brought you to America.
Yes, so, you know, there is more than, I think, 500-600 Ayurvedic institutions and university level. There is actually Ayurvedic universities in India, too.
Mm.
So there is only what they teach is Ayurvedic medicine. Like Jamnagar, there is one in Gujarat, west part of India, there is a, which is very famous. And then there's a in Rajasthan, which is very famous for the palaces. There's a Jaipur university there, but lots of universities there. And but the sad part is, you know, with the allopathic medicine, the allocation of the funds is only 2% towards the Ayurvedic medicine, whereas 98% of the funds are given to the regular medical schools. So there is not enough incentive for the Ayurvedic, you know, doctors to learn and grow and do the research. So, but right now it's actually, funny thing is, since people learn that, you know, we are not going anywhere with the symptom fixing medicine, you know, you grab a pill and you kind of try to fix a symptom, and you're not, you know, like a blood pressure pill you take the rest of your life, and actually it kills you more faster than the disease itself. Same thing with the diabetes, same thing with the heart disease, same thing with the cancer. The failure rate of cancer is in advanced cancer stage 3 and stage 4 is 98%. Only 2% people survive more than 5 years. This is all, you know, real statistics. And the overall, you know, chemotherapy is only 25% effective overall. So you can see that, you know, there is 75% failure right there. So a lot of people say, wow, what's going on? You know, we are not getting, we are actually given this big promise, okay, this is going to cure it or this is going to fix it. But when you see it, it does not do that. And there is so many side effects. So with that, you know, picture, say, oh, my God, we had a wonderful system. And so what's going on now, there are a lot of places, like in Kerala, part of India, that government of Kerala is taken off, and this is, okay, wow, we had a wonderful system, and we will help the Ayurvedic physicians. So there is a lot of tourism, medical tourism, going to that place of South India, where people are coming. And if you look at it, Google, the results are phenomenally. People getting better with the autoimmune diseases. People are getting with the diabetes. Similarly, in our clinic here, you know, we treat cancer. We treat autoimmune diseases. We treat ulcerative colitis, which is also, you know, you have a lot of interest in that one. Diabetes, like, I've taken people off the insulin. Actually, I wrote in my book, and not one or two, just number of people have taken off the drugs, and they are doing phenomenally good. Now I'm practicing in America 29 years, so you can see that, you know, there is a track record. Now we talk about evidence-based medicine, and this is the real evidence which we have, that people get better. They don't have to depend on those toxic drugs, and it's a lifestyle. You know, if you don't want to change your lifestyle, you're not going to get better. So I think people need to learn that, you know, if you're putting garbage in, garbage out. That is very simple.
So now Ayurvedic medicine, you know, treats people, not the diseases. So tell us how they look at the human being.
So, you know, the one thing what very unique about Ayurvedic medicine is there is a concept of body type, which we call Prakriti. So Ayurvedic doctors have realized for centuries that we are all are different. Now we're talking about genomic medicine, and which is a very recent talk, that everyone is, you know, different genomic, and some people can take a Tylenol and be fine, and other people take Tylenol and can bleed to death. And but Ayurvedic medicine has figured it out for several thousand years ago. So it's based on the five element, which is a quantum physics. And these are ether, air, fire, water, and earth. And so we all are composition of these five elements, including the human body, and everything else in the universe. So depending upon what is our composition, how many of these elements we got, we get different kind of body type, and we call them vata, pitta, and kapha. So vata is a combination of ether and air, and the pitta is a combination of fire and water, and kapha is a combination of earth and water. Depending upon our composition, like, you know, you are making a house, are you putting more sticks, are you putting more cardboard, are you putting more concrete, that house is going to be different. So depending upon these elements, our body figures can be different, and they can withstand different kind of stresses, and they behave differently. For example, the concrete house will behave entirely different than a wooden house or a cardboard house, you know. So depending upon that, you know, number of combinations, we behave differently. Like, for example, Vata people, they are always in the hurry. They do things very fast. They learn things very fast, but they forget what those things very quickly too. They are kind of spendthrifts. They are always worrier. They are anxietyful. Pitta people are kind of very focused. They are go-getters, overachiever, overworker, burn themselves. So they have to light their candle. They're burning their fuel. So they get inflammation. Whereas the Vata people, they're always worried. So they get anxiety, fear, nervous diseases, nervous system diseases. Whereas Pitta people will get more inflammatory diseases. Kapha people are kind of a loving, caring, like my doctor, Dr. Z, you know. They are very, very kind of hugging kind of people, you know. So the problem is they can gain weight because earth molecules. So they smell pizza and they will gain 5 pounds, you know. Whereas anybody else can eat pizza, may not be, you know, have any problem. So we all are different, and then we behave differently. And then depending upon the reactivity is different. So environment will react differently. For example, when the spring season comes in, if you're kapha, you'll be more drainage. You know, there'll be more sinus, more allergies kind of stuff coming in. Whereas for Vata people, the winter is cold, and it bothers them. They get dry skin. They get more aches and pains. Pitta people, in the hot summer day, they get problem. They have a heart problem, you know, tolerating heat, and their symptoms get worse. So it's like, you know, we have different constitutions, and we need to learn what we are and then behave that way so we balance them. The idea is to create a balance. Nothing is bad. Nothing is good.
Now, sometimes you can have like a layer of different disease on top of a constitution, Dr. Sodhi. Like I noticed that, you know, some people may have you know, been born a particular constitution, but then somehow they have added like a layer of vata or another imbalance. How does that kind of work when a physician, how does the physician cull out the you know, the essential constitution versus the kind of the disease layers that kind of go on top of those things?
Yeah, the thing is, you know, we are born with particular hardware. That's what I tell my patients. For example, you buy a computer, so there is a hardware. And that hardware is provided for us from our parents, mother, father. And depending upon where you're born, like if you're born in the top mountains of Everest, genetically you have a special gene which can carry the oxygen to the high altitude. Me and you will be huffing and puffing in 10,000 or 8,000. But a Sherpa can climb on top of Mount Everest without oxygen cylinder. So that makes a difference. And then also programming, you know, how our parents, mother and father, behaved with this. So that is the initial programming. And then the food becomes a bigger programmer. And depending upon what kind of food we are exposed to or eating, we actually start behaving that way. Like, you know, if you start eating a lot of heavy pasta, breads and sugar and milk and dairy, so these are all kapha food. So you're going to gain weight. And you'll be slow and sluggish. You get a lot of allergies. You get a lot of cholesterol issue. You get diabetes kind of issue. But if you are, you know, you remove those things, so that we talked about the layers, you're developing layers because of those programmings on you. It's mental, emotional, physical. So mental, emotional comes from the environment where you grew up. And so some of them are natural, like, you know, if you grew up in sea level, you have more tolerance at the sea level. And if you are born at high altitude, you have more tolerance for that one that Mother Nature provides us naturally. And then our parenting and the food. So we now develop the layers and the programming. And sometimes that programming is not exactly what you are, and then we create a problem. But if you learn what my constitution is and how I need to balance it out, then you are in good health.
Well, I'll give you an example. Like, you know, when I knew you, when we were in school, I was riding my bike every day to school, as you remember, probably. I would ride. I was an avid biker. And, and it balanced the sedentary things. I was strong and, thin as a rail. But then as I got through my 30s, 40s, and well into 50s now, I noticed that it's easier to gain weight, and I'm not I'm not riding my bike as much as I'm doing a lot of exercise. I'm a martial artist and black belt in several forms, and I try to keep up the things, but it's like I still eat like I'm 20 years old. That's the thing, is I never, that fire, my digestive fire is strong, I guess, and so but at the same time, it's not, things have to change, I guess, as we get older. So as we get older, our constitutions change.
Yeah, actually, that's what Ayurvedic medicine has given a very wonderful description. Like the childhood, we have more kapha kind of stuff. So if you see, in the childhood, you get more mucus kind of diseases, like a more common cold, flu, chest cold, allergies kind of stuff, And as you get into the youth, we get more inflammatory, like gastritis, appendicitis, colitis, Crohn's kind of stuff, And then we slip into the older age, we get more vata. So that's a hormonal imbalance. And that's what you're going through right now. Is the hormones, like we going for andropause, you don't have menopause, sorry, but I can joke with you.
Yeah, no. So last the andropause, time I looked, I didn't think so.
Yeah, so the hormones was, you are making your normal hormone, but they are not transferring. And this is also, as you know, between the control of anabolic and catabolic pathways. And so a lot of us, including me and you, we are under a lot of stress. So we make a lot of cortisol, and when we're making a lot of cortisol, we are shifting the balance to the cortisol, because cortisol is a fight and height kind of a hormone, and body needs to make it more rapidly. So your all emphasis is making that one, and everything is going to the drain, because it's not going at proper places. So if you follow that, the steroidogenic pathways, and you see, the testosterone, DHEA, estrogen, they all are made in a sequence. And there is a certain pipeline which actually makes them. And so what happens if you displace them, you may be making more estrogenic hormones, and with being a male, that's not good for you. You may not be making enough testosterone, and that is, a burning hormone. That is a strong hormone. So that is just, I'm giving you an example here, and I see it in my clinic all the time. And I look at I look at the whole pathways, I draw this, and then say, okay, this is going on, let's try to block this, bad guy from here and put pipeline into this one. And we are so successful just using herbs. I never use testosterone. I never use DHEA. No, I will say I use DHEA, but other any hormones, because we just balance them with just using herbs.
Right, and that segues into your fabulous book, Ayurvedic Herbs, the comprehensive resource for Ayurvedic healing solutions. There's not very many... well-written, scientifically based books on Ayurvedic herbs. I've been looking around, and they may talk about, first of all, they may have everything in Sanskrit, which to the Western doctor, we don't understand the names. Second of all, they may have the Indian names of these things in the particular, dialect of wherever these herbs are from. And again, it's not in the Latin. Your book, Virinder, is stupendous in that it's in the Latin, it has the references, it has the scientific studies, it has your experiences, and it goes through, like the top, the top 30 or so Ayurvedic herbs?
50 herbs, yeah, around almost 50, 48.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell us about, we clearly don't need all of these herbs, so how would we, first of all, what inspired you to write your book, and how would we use it?
Yeah, actually, the one interesting thing is I started practicing in 1988 when I graduated from Bastyr. And in the beginning, there is a difficulty getting patients, as So I used to go and lecture at a yoga studio, this and that, and people will start coming, and people will get results. And then they will go to their medical doctor, said, I got to this doctor and I'm really better. I don't need blood pressure pill. I don't need this diabetes pill. I don't need this Remicade. At that time, the Enbrel, the was the alpha blocker, which was the drug of choice at that time. I don't need this anymore. And they will say, there is no evidence that Ayurvedic medicine works. And so I said, God, you know, how I can pull the evidence together? So I start collecting information. I start collecting research. And I start writing. It took me 15, 20 years to write this book.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
You can see the volume of the research which I collected. You know, and I was just joking to my resident doctor. Said, you know, I think this is going to be on continuous basis because I can't stop this work now because there is so much information available and pouring out that we have to let the people know that this is not a hocus-pocus medicine. It's a real evidence-based science. And a lot of times when people talk about it in science, if you look at the modern allopathic medicine, every 5 years they are putting their old theory behind and they say, okay, this is the latest theory and it works and the old one is not good. So is that a science? That's not
really
a science. No, science means it should be staying throughout the time similar, isn't it? So they actually call it scientific and it's a fake science, like, you know, the statin drugs, you know. We all know that how horrible it is, and it does not provide any, you know, benefit, 0% benefit. But still, everybody is being prescribed, even today. And we actually just wrote an article on the statin drugs, and we pulled out three large studies with the 5,000 patients each, and has 0% benefit, 0% benefit. And on top of it, you have 46% chances of getting diabetes. Now you tell me you're helping the disease or you're making it more worse. So that's why I, you know, pulled out the research to help people to understand. This is, you know, a book which is written mainly for physicians or people who are interested in learning about that how these herbs works. And so this will be good for the physicians, students, or people who are curious, who has taken Ayurvedic herbs like ashwagandha. And there is a phenomenally interesting studies available on it. One is it lowers cortisol by 30%. Which is very phenomenally good. It lowers your DHEA by 32% and testosterone by 32%. So that is phenomenally good and is very non-toxic. I have used this herb for many different conditions. And one of a very interesting case, which I will discuss with you, I had a patient with multiple myeloma, and her actually husband died with the multiple myeloma, and he was given chemotherapy and the other drug, thalidomide, and all those kind of stuff, and which has actually no benefit, and he died horribly. And she said, oh, my God, I'm not going to go chemotherapy. I put her on heavy doses of ashwagandha, and she went into remission. Actually, I mentioned that case in my book, but I had only one case of that one. So there is, you know, I think these herbs has a tremendous amount of potential. The other one, which is everybody knows now, is a curcumin, which is the turmeric extract. Boswellia, Google, neem, holy basil, Tinosporia cardifolia. So, you know, there is tons of these wonderful herbs. And the one thing, that Eugene, which you will appreciate is the toxicity of these herbs is so bare minimum that if you take a pound of it, most of them, not all of them, it will not kill you. So, you know, say, wow, you know, that is strange. And in Ayurvedic medicine, we can actually, some of the herbs which are called rasayanas. Rasayanas are adaptogens. And these adaptogens, they do so many wonderful functions in the body that it adapts to almost everything. Now with the new genomic models, which we are also, the researchers coming on the genomics. So basically what these do, these herbs, they have messenger RNA, and that locks into the messenger RNA of the body and then start working through the natural mechanism of the body with the intelligence. We all have that natural intelligence, which digest our food or distribute the nutrient and get the waste out, and works fantastically. And when the body does not need it, it shuts off. When body needs it, it kicks it on. So I think that's the way we should need it. And that's why the toxicity profile of these herbs are so low, because it's not forcing on you like a chemical. Chemical, we actually trying to figure out what body makes. We give it from outside. But then it does not obey the laws of natural, the intelligence in the body. Like you can give testosterone, Exactly, it's not the same test. So what the body makes is funny, it's very close to it, but it's not exactly the same. But when you give to it from outside, the body actually has lots of side effects. But when you can trigger your own testosterone, like with ashwagandha, or there's a herb called Makuna pruriens, when you have, I think, maybe hundreds of plus patients with the low testosterone in the 200s, and when they give those, they go to 400 and 500 with the herbs, with Makuna pruriens, with ashwagandha. And we have a preparation called Purush, and they go into 400 and 500 in 3 months. And they have no side effect because they are not forcing from outside. And actually, if you take testosterone, for example, you become sterile. You know, you cannot produce a baby. We have so many patients who fathered, you know, after taking our herbs because their testosterone levels were low and the sperm quality was so poor that once the number of the testosterone went up, their sperm quality improved and they were able to father the kids, you know.
Yes, there was a very interesting study you talked about on ashwagandha, and it was a man who had not only low sperm, but sperm that under the microscope had two heads and three tails and swam in circles and had no idea what to do. And then through the... Now, I think a lot of that maybe has to do with, you know, our exposure, men's exposure to chemicals that maybe are disrupting the testes, they're disrupting...
The hormones,
biochemistry, and the hormone pathways, exactly. Yep. And so it's interesting that, you know, so the ashwagandha is only part of the Ayurvedic program. I know that's what your, you know, book's about. You need to do detoxification, which I know is a huge part of your clinic, to get rid of those obstacles to cure. Tell us about how Ayurveda views detoxification, Dr. Sodhi.
So, you know, that's a very wonderful question, Dr. Z. You know, our body, as I said earlier, is a full pharmacy. We don't need a doctor. The animals don't need doctors in the wild. They don't get their physicals done. They don't get their prostate or pap smears done, you know.
That's pretty funny. I got to use that joke.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, unless we mess them up, they don't get any messed up. You know, they get pretty healthy. They just get things done the way it is. And then the mother nature clock kicks off, and we actually go for recycling. And they live pretty normal, healthy lifespan, whatever they have. And but in our case, what we have done, if you know, there is a lot of interesting studies, though we are living longer. But you and me know that we're not living longer. You know, we are actually the aging span is the same. In older days, a lot of people died in the wars and all those kind of stuff, or childhood diseases. But if you cross that one, we are not actually ahead of what we used to live before. But actually, the quality of life was much better than what we have today. A lot of people are living in nursing homes, and they are sickly sick, and we are just, you know, forcing them to live longer. So the body is a food pharmacy. And like, for example, when we eat food, we make into a nutrient part, and then we make into a garbage part, you know, which garbage is not a garbage because that also supports the bacteria in our body. So a human body has around 100 trillion cells, and we have around 1,000 trillion bacteria. And these bacteria are very important part of our ecosystem. And so the level of toxicity increases or decreases depending upon our bacteria. If you have friendly bacteria growing in you, then your ecosystem is balanced and it does not produce a lot of toxic material. And when you don't make a lot of toxic material, your body is perfectly happy and functioning. So when you have a toxic load which is above the threshold of the body, which body cannot clear it out through our regular routes of detoxification, like pooping or urinating or sweating or coughing, and many more, you know, I'm just, as you know, the physiology and pathology is a long, and there is a, several volumes have been written on it, but I'm just putting them in three words. But basic, this is what happens, you know, you poop it out, or you urinate it out, or you sweat it out. And aside from those, you know, pathways and chemicals and cytochromes and all those,
some,
you know,
from the lungs,
things.
Right? The lungs
exactly.
Also. And
exactly, yeah, that's what they're coughing in a few, detoxify from that. So, now, the end result is your body has that clear sap which is flowing through all over the body to your head, to your brain, to your heart, to your testes, to your toes and to nails. And, you know, your body is functioning, your hairs are shiny, your nails are pretty nice and glistening, your skin is lustrous, and you have the energy, and you have a good sleep, and you don't have bags under your eyes. That's why we look at all those symptoms. You look at your tongue. Okay, what does your tongue look like? Is it coated or not coated? If you're coated, that means you're not digesting your food, so you're making more toxic load. We're looking at the eye bags. Says, oh my God, you have eye bags, you know, so you're not eliminating kidneys properly, so your kidneys are going to back off, you know. So basically, body has natural detoxification. So what we are doing with the Panchakarma program, we are actually aiding in to detoxify that natural route. So it's a very unique program where what we are doing is we are allowing the body to get to that detoxification process. So you can't beat up the body, so okay, detoxify. In the Mother Nature, for example, when people get, say, a bug, a salmonella, or a flu bug or virus, so what happens? The body get temperature. Then, you know, sometimes people get excessive bowel movement, they get diarrhea, or they get little coughing, they get increased urination. So those are the way the body is trying to get rid of those toxins. So Ayurvedic medicine has realized that this is the way the body detoxifies. So what they do, there are three main phases. So first is preparation for detoxification. So you're preparing the body to detoxify. For example, you know, you have iron stuff and it is rusted out. To remove the rust, you put some kind of chemical on it and it actually eats up the rust, and then you wash it off and you have a shiny metal underneath it. So similarly, we have figured out that the oils and the fats are phenomenally good for dissolving different chemicals and toxins and pesticides and insecticides. So we give it internally. You take oils internally, and you also apply special medicated oils on the skin. Mm. And Dr. Z, as you know, the skin is a phenomenally good absorber of medicine. And this is another route, you know, of applying medicine on the body without the, you know, oral route. So when we apply that, and these herbs are actually made according to what kind of disease or constitution you have, so there are specialized techniques which we call the marma point. Marma points are very vital points on the body, very comparable to the acupressure or acupuncture points. So these are energetic points, and you know, like for example, in fibromyalgia, people have those overactive points on your spine. But you know, you see in tendonitis, you know, or in Achilles tendons, or with knee pain, you will see there are a lot of tender spots on your SI and your TFL band, you know. And if you start working on it, your knee pain goes away. And so, you know, like for example, in asthma case, they have a very tender spot at the angle of the your base of the lungs on the back there. And if you start working on, the asthma goes away. And actually, there is a research written on those things too. Some people even inject B12 injection into those tender spots, you know. So basically, we have so many mapped out basic points on the body. And when you work on those points, the toxins are collected in there. And we're putting the oils and we're massaging it. They start to move out. And they're not in the circulation. And then we put them into the hot saunas. So many different kind of hot saunas have been prescribed. And in my clinic, I use now mostly a far infrared sauna. And sometimes I use the steam saunas. And so now what are you doing? You know, you are stirring those things up and you're moving them out through sweating. And as you know, there's tons of literature published on saunas now and how good they are. From curing cancers to weight loss to diabetes to all those different kind of stuff. So now what we have, we're mobilizing the toxins and then we're sweating them out. So you go in a number of treatments like that. So then what we have done, now we have dislodged those toxic load from your body and now you're ready to be you know, moving out. For example, now you have a clogged plumbing in your house. So first, what do? You put the Drano or some caustic stuff in there, and you leave it overnight. And in the morning, you flush it out with the water. And you try to flush it out when you put it. It does not work. So that's exactly the same strategy we're using here. So the first, you know, is actually in Ayurvedic medicine, it used to be vomiting. So people were induced to vomiting. Like the Mother Nature, when you got picked up some bug, you throw it out. But in America, people don't like that process. So I modified it to the fasting, which is very close, you know, to the vomiting. So you are kind of, you know, not eating food. Are you eating like a low-caloric food, but very nutrient-dense food? For example, greens, fruits,
kale.
You know.
Yeah, kale.
And, you know, so like you can have a head of broccoli, which is in the whole day. It will fill you up, but has only 80 calories in it. But it has a 10 grams of protein and tons of phytonutrients, which is so good for you from detoxifying the whole body. But this is just one example. It depends upon what your disease and what you have. So we devise that way. And then after fasting, so now your toxins are moving. So we are trying to dislodge them from the small intestine. So we give a purging. So purge is, you know, you take a laxative, and there are many different kind of laxatives, and now you're moving them from the small intestine, and you're pooping it out, you know. So you have loose stools, and you're getting rid of those excessive load in there. And then after that, we are focusing on the large intestine. As you know, the large intestine is the biggest warehouse of our bacteria count. Up to 90% of bacteria lives in the large intestine, and we have trillions of them, and they need to be very happy. But most of us, we have addictions to sugar or that fried food, or we have been exposed to antibiotics, hormones. All those bacteria are not very happy there. They are unhappy bacteria. So what we do the enemas treatment, you know, which I have actually converting them into colonic treatment. So there are also two kinds of colonics done. One is cleansing. So first we want to get rid of those excessive bacteria which is present there, and there are specific herbs which we use and to get rid of that. And then we do the restorative enemas. That means, you know, we washed out and the good and bad, because when we wash, you know, we don't have a selective behavior. We cannot do that. So we wash some good and some, and majority of the bad ones. Now we're trying to restore them. So we can use probiotics, and there are different strains of probiotic, which is actually another very emerging, beautiful field. And there are so many, you know, thousands of probiotic strains available, which are actually healthy for us. And then we also provide the food for the probiotic. For example, traditionally ghee, which is a clarified butter, were used. And if you look at the composition of the ghee, which is a butyric acid, and that's why I call butter. And the butyric acid is the small chain fatty acid, which is the food for the colonic bacteria. And we also use sesame oil, and the sesame oil is the propionic acid. We also use olive oil, which is the oleic acid. So, you know, you can say, wow, it's very scientific. They knew the science. You know, and you know that there are some preparations out in natural medicine with butyric acid for people with ulcerative colitis and all those kind of stuff.
Yes.
But this is another way of providing, you know, the good food for the good bacteria to grow. And lately, you know, there has been a lot of research published on fecal implant and type of stuff. But you can also enhance the growth of those bacteria by using these techniques. So now what we have done, we have first cleaned out the body, we detoxify it, and then we're trying to restore the normal bacteria in you, and we give you herbs which actually help that process in there. And once we, you know, put you back together, your body says, oh, I can breathe, I can function, I'm clean, I can digest the food, I can eliminate the garbage from my body automatically. And it doesn't matter what kind of disease you have. You have a heart disease, or you have a diabetes, or you have a cancer, or you have a rheumatoid arthritis, all disease get better because now your own normal physiology takes over. I will just share a case here with you. I had a patient of around 60 years old female who came to me with a FMD, which is a fibromuscular dystrophy of the carotid arteries and also of the blood vessels of the heart. So all the blood vessels were like an electrical cord. They was not passing through the blood. And she was told that she can die in three to six months because there's nothing. And they put her on statins and the blood thinners and type of stuff. And she was getting so many side effects with it. And so she has up to 90% blockage in those blood vessels. And after coming to me after 3 years, when they did another CAT scan, all her blood vessels was visceral-fully clean. And so, you know, she's kind of, oh, my God, you know. And that's what we did. We just put through the cleansing program, give some herbs, and she body was completely backed off. And that was kind of a, you know, this kind of case needs to be written in medical journals.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's take a quick break to get a cup of Tulsi tea.
Okay.
And do a station ID, and we'll be right back with Dr. Virender Sodhi and his wonderful book, Ayurvedic Herbs, the comprehensive resource for Ayurvedic healing solutions. So stay right here, folks. Of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamfro, naturopathic physician, and we have my illustrious classmate and physician for many years now, Dr. Virender Sodhi, one of the first Ayurvedic and board-certified licensed naturopathic physicians in the U.S. He has a company called Ayush Herbs, by the way, which is located in Bellevue, and which gives us Ayurvedic medicine easy to find. And we're talking about his book, Ayurvedic Herbs, and I like the saying in the back of the book, it says, health is inherent. Our work is to help maintain it. So this is a book where Dr. Sodhi talks about the practical use of herbs along with Ayurvedic diet and lifestyle, yoga, exercise, and breathing, and to really help people change diseases which they say are incurable. I guess what Dr. Bastier used to say is, There's only incurable people, Dr. Sodhi, not incurable diseases, right?
Exactly, because, you know, it's our mental attitude. If you want to get better, the other day, actually, I saw one patient. It's interesting, and this lady has vasculitis. As you know, the vasculitis is not a very fun disease to treat with, and she has been put on very heavy doses of prednisolone for almost now 6 weeks, and which has not much good results. And the second option was to put her on immune blocking drugs like chemotherapy or Imuron, and she's 90 years old. And so I said, you know, no way, because, you know, if you're 90 years old, you're going to kill her more faster by putting on those drugs than the disease itself. We started our treatment in 1 week. Her white cell count from 22.5 dropped to 17.4 in just a week, which if you look at it, there is around a 30-40% drop in the white cell count, and her symptom improved. So, you know, look at the natural medicine. And what they give to her is a co-curcumin, which is a bioavailable curcuminoids, and we just give 1 teaspoon twice a day, blend it up, and that makes a huge difference. And so, you know, that lady said, oh, yeah, I can see a change there. And even doctor said, the rheumatologist said, yeah, this is a change. And she said, okay, I'm going for vacation for 1 week, and I will reevaluate after 1 week. So you can see, if you want to change it, if you want to make a change, then, yes, you have options available for you.
Tell us about neem. Neem is in your book, and I'm fascinated by neem because I was just out this morning spraying my garden with neem, and but it has many more uses than just a garden herb.
You know, neem is a very interesting plant. Mahatma Gandhi, all the world knows him, and he used to chew the stick of it, which is actually, I did it as a young kid too, for toothbrushing. And I have no tooth decay. I'm 58 years old, and no teeth disease, no gum disease, and And for so many years, you know, and not only me, we are four brothers, none of us has any decay because I think we were using this neem stick as a young kid. It is a wonderful plant. It grows in the India and the subcontinent of India. And actually now they're growing in Arizona and Hawaii and all those different places too. Every part of this plant is used for different ways, you know, from the bark to root to leaves to berries and then extracted the oil. That's what you're using actually on your garden is the oil part of it, which is actually a study shows that it expels around 108 species of different bugs from the garden. And it doesn't kill them, it just expels them. So which is, that's what we need, you know. One of my theories that every organism on this universe has the right to live, you know. We should not be killing everything. And I think that killer mentality has created more diseases for us. And certainly if you look at the cancers and all those things, I believe, and I think you believe that too, that we have increased more because of that pesticide, insecticide kind of deals, you know, which is in our food chain and which is killing us slowly rather than fastly. So basically the whole concept of the neem is it is a must plant in every house. It was planted in the kind of out periphery of the house. So what it was doing, actually, it was actually preventing the bugs to come into the house, so which was very nice and intelligent. And like, you know, if you have a special function, you make a garland of the neem leaves and you decorate it outside the house. Again, the purpose was that these bugs and stuff will not enter into the house. The neem has a very powerful action on the skin. It's used ceremonially. It's also used, you know, internally for the skin. It's also phenomenally good for diabetes. In my book, I wrote the research on it. Even people who are, you know, insulin-dependent diabetes, they were able to cut their insulin requirement by 40%. And I see in my clinic all the time. I have a type 1, I think I also mentioned her in my book there, type 1 diabetes, and when she came to me, her A1C was 12.3. And she was taking, I think, 70, 80 units of insulin. And now she's taking only 3 to 4 units of insulin. And her A1C is 5.9, 5.7, 5, you know, around perfect range what you should be. So you can see that is an amazing good product for even diabetes. Neem I use that for, you know, when people go for tropical excursions and they are worried about malaria or dengue fever or chikungunya, like if you want to go to India, Thailand, or Latin American countries, people are being forced to take doxycycline or other malarial drugs, anti-malarial drugs. And I don't. And I actually, myself, when I go to India, just I pop in few pills of neem every day, and I'm very happy to report that have never have issue. Not only me, I think more than 3,000 patients who has taken neem has no issues when they went to travel to, you know, Southeast Asia, like Thailand, China, India, and those places. So phenomenally good protective for these, you know, different kind of wide array of diseases. I think that's why it was kind of worshipped.
Yes. In your book, you talk about all the scientific things with neem, with cancer and
exactly.
tumors
yeah.
and anti-inflammatory effects, antiviral.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, amazing. I was amazed to read all this research that's been done on neem lately.
Exactly. Yeah, actually, you know, I think if you now Google it, you'll be able to find a lot more research on it.
Yeah.
The anti-cancer property is very interesting. You know, there is a process called autophagy. You know that process, don't you? Do you remember
yeah.
from your physiology, autophagy?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so which actually kind of, self-destruction. It's like apoptosis, but not apoptosis. So basically what the body does when you put the people in the neem, it actually forces them to go into autophagy. Another thing, I believe this is, my hypothesis, because since it takes away the sugar and most of the cancer cells are dependent on sugar to live, 90% of them, except for the head and neck tumors. So when you're taking the sugar away, they kind of, you know, create their own suicidal attempts to die. And so again, very non-toxic treatment available for, you know, the cancer. And I think, you know, I've been treating a lot of cancer patients lately, I believe that a lot of these cancer can be treated very well with natural medicine, and they don't need to be going on these toxic chemicals, because now I have, you know, evidence in my clinic that this can be done, because I think it was never attempted or not done because people were so scared that if they not go on these chemical drugs, they're never going to get better. But now there is actually tons of data available that a lot of people even can cure themselves if they follow the simple laws of Mother Nature. And I don't know if you have read that book, I forgot her name, it's Kelly Turner, and Dr. Kelly Turner, and it's called Spontaneous Remissions. You know, very, very, you know, phenomenal book. She has actually documented lots of metastatic cancer patients who has gone into the normalizing their cancers, you know. So I think basically adding in the normal healing process in the body can do rest of the function automatically. So neem actually, you know, is also used as a toothpaste. There's a toothpaste available. There's a neem oil available, which is a phenomenal good insect repellent properties. Remember, you know, we talked about the tree outside the house because that was has a repellent action. So if you're going for hunting or, you know, outdoor activity, you can apply on your skin. What I do is, like, I was just in Jacksonville, Florida last week. My kids, actually, our daughter-in-law is doing her master's in endodontist, and so we were just there to help her, to set up her. And, you know, Jacksonville, as you know, is famous for the bugs. And so we were popping in neem before we went there, and I didn't got a single bug bite. So it's really, you know, there is actually, there's a studies available that up to 80% less bug bites on people who are taking neem or has application of neem, and which is actually compared to DEET, which is a poison, which will kill you, your nervous system. And I think that is the accuracy rate is around 67%, if I'm correct. Similar, like, you know, so basically supersedes the DEET and no toxic effect on top of it.
I've used it for, like, ringworm and fungus. It's very good for fungus and ringworm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're so right. And, you know, the skin psoriasis, you know, there's actually studies available on that one, too. Acne, phenomenally good. You know, I combine with curcuminoids and neem, and it becomes a history. Another thing which I wrote, actually, in my book is, too, the MRSA, which is such a nasty bug. And actually, thanks to the hospitals and the antibiotics, which we have created a more resistant kind of bacteria there. But I have several cases of MRSA. Actually, I also wrote an article in NDNR about that one. And these people, once they are on neem plus and curcumin, they become a history. They did not got infections again. So very, very powerful for, I think, just modulating your immune system differently. Like if you look at it, chikungunya, malaria, dengue fever, fungus, you look at this MRSA. So, you know, there is so many of things it does better, and the mechanism, and that's why I think a lot of medical doctors, when I talk to them, they start with, oh, this is not true. It cannot be true. And when I show them the research, then there's, oh, there is a research available on that one, too. So it's like, I think we, the allopathically, when people are trained, they're told there is a one pathway, and this is the only way it can be done, and otherwise there doesn't exist, but which is not true. You know, and I know that.
Well, I'm going to have Dr. Kamai get back in touch with you, because we just scratched the surface, and I want to talk about tribulus and eclipta and creteva, Boswellia, holy basil, nigella. There's so many herbs. We're going to have you back in a couple of weeks to talk about that. But tell us where you can get your book.
Yeah, so actually people can go on Amazon, you know, and search under my name, Dr. Virendra Sodhi. And you can also go on our website.
S-O-D-H-I, right?
That's right, S-O-D-H-I. And also people can go on our website. The company is www.ayush.com, AYUSH.com, and they can go on that one and get that too. And also you can go on my clinic website, which is www.ayurvedicscience, Ayurvedic, ayurvedicscience.com. So, you know, there are different ways, and they can also call in the company, our company, Ayush, 1-800-925-1371. The number is 1-800-925-1371 or www.ayush.com.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we'll have you back on because, we, you know, Ayurvedic is so vast and your book is a real great resource. We didn't even scratch the surface of quite a number of these herbs, so I definitely will have you back, you know, maybe in August or so. And
yeah, no problem.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on the show. And, you know, yeah, it's wonderful. I'm glad that you're doing this kind of work for a long time.
You had to get up early to join us today, but hopefully you were up meditation and doing yoga.
No, actually, I get up at 5 o'clock, so you didn't wake me up.
Okay. Very good. Have a good day. Take care,
you
Dr.
Too,
Sodhi.
Sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z signing off. Remember, you can get information about our events at naturalnurse.com. Stay healthy, folks, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.